Shanti, Rupa Shanti, Nava Shanti, Jaya Prarati, Jamalamai, Gangamai, Dusse Maharani, Bhakti Devi, Samadeva Siddhiki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Srila Madhava ki, Shri Loni Shingadev ki, Shri Panchatattva ki, Gopremanandi. All glories of the Sum of the Buddha. All glories of the Sum of the Buddha. All glories of the Sum of the Buddha. All glories in my Lord Sita Sisi Guru Guranda. Krishna Sadamo Pagate Narayana Dhi Sahabi Kalamasa Shami Shaparana Kojurata Nalayana Namaskritam Ram Charam Nadotam Devim Satsim Vyasa
The Bhagavatam is as brief as the sun. It was arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied with knowledge, visions, etc. First to Gloucester, visions of the dense darkness of the age of Kali, shall get light out of this Purana. Before beginning our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, we should first offer respects to the person of God in Narayan, to the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, the goddess of living in the Sarasvati, the author of yesterday, and the spiritual master Shri
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Chapter 30, text 13.
Kando
Kramolo
Chaya Labda Kanya Kamala Lochana Kam Chapa Vidhan Jagrihu Buruha Rupa Nandana.
I'm at that blissful stage between glasses. There's a story that a man dies, goes to heaven. Actually, he was just about to get his daughter married, his granddaughter married. He was about to change his will, get his dimwit son-in-law out of the whole thing. And he died of a cerebral thrombosis. You know, blew a blood vessel in the brain. And he had to finish all his work. He goes before Yamaraj. He says, hey, where's the complaint compartment? So I don't recommend it if you go before Yamaraj and file a complaint. But anyway, this is his thing. You took me too soon. I didn't have a chance to fix this. I fixed it. Where is the warning? And Yamaraj says, no. He's very apologetic. He said, I gave you so many warnings. I gave you gray hair. I gave you glasses. I gave you a cane. So I've got those warnings. So here we go. In between glasses, wish me luck.
Kando Pramalochaya Labda. Kanya Kamala Lochana Kamcha Pridam Jagrihu Uruha Nripanandana Kando from Lochaya Labda Kanya Kamala Lochana Kamcha Pavidam Jagrihu
Kanya
Kamala Lochana
Kancha
Pavedam Jagrihu Uruha Nripanandana. Yeah.
Kanya kamala lochana. Tam chapa vidham cha grihu. Kanda pramalochana. Kamla kamalochana. Tam chapa vidham cha grihu. Buruhani Panandana Kando Pramalochana Kanda Pramalochana Kanda Pramalochana Buruhani Panandana Kando
of the sage Kandu.
From Lochaya,
by a heavenly society girl named Pramlocha.
Labda,
obtained.
Kanya,
daughter. Kamala Lochana, lotus eyed. Tam, her. Cha,
also.
Papavidam, given up. Jagrihu, accepted. Buruha, the trees. Nripanandana, O sons of King Prachinibharishat. Translation. O sons of King Prachinibharishat, the heavenly society girl named Pramlocha kept the lotus-eyed daughter of Kandu in the care of the forest trees. Then she went back to the heavenly planet. This daughter was born by the coupling of the apsara named Pramlocha with the sage Kandu, also you say. O sons of King Prachinibharishat, the heavenly society girl named Pramlocha kept the lotus-eyed daughter of Kandu in the care of the forest trees. Then she went back to the heavenly planets. This daughter was born by the coupling of the apsara named Pramlocha with the sage Kandu. Purport. Whenever a great sage undergoes severe austerities for material power, the king of heaven, Indra, becomes very envious. All the demigods have responsible posts for the management of the universal affairs and are highly qualified with pious activities. Although they are ordinary living entities, they are able to obtain responsible posts like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna. As is the nature of this material world, the king of heaven, Indra, is very anxious if a great sage... I was told that in London, they have a rule that if your cell phone goes off during a talk, you have to donate £10 to the deities. So, for the sake of Radha Madhava, if your cell phone goes off, you can donate the equivalent amount in rupees, the hundis right there. Don't worry, bad news will still be there when you turn it back on, you won't miss nothing. The material world is filled with such envy that everyone becomes afraid of his neighbors. Every businessman is afraid of his associates, because this material world is a field of activities for all kinds of envious people who have come here to compete for the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus Indra was very much afraid of the severe austerities performed by the great sage Kandu, and he sent Pramlocha to break his vows and austerities. A similar incident took place in the case of Vishvamrita. From other incidents in the Shastra, it appears that Indra has always been envious. When King Prithu was celebrating various sacrifices, outdoing Indra, Indra became very envious, and he disturbed King Prithu's sacrifices. This has already been discussed in previous chapters. King Indra became successful in breaking his vow of the great sage Kandu, who became attracted by the beauty of the heavenly society girl Pramlocha, and begot a female child. This child is described herein as lotus-eyed and very beautiful. Being thus successful in her mission, Pramlocha returned to the heavenly planets, leaving the newborn child in the care of the trees. Fortunately, the trees accepted the girl and agreed to raise her. Om Agnanandasya Agnanasabhakaya Chakshushamudatam Kazade Shiva. So we have planted a kingdom of trees. We have someone in the heavenly planet, Lord Indra. We have a heavenly society girl. Only in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. We believe, we Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, we believe amazing stories. We should not run away from it. We believe some very amazing, mind-blowing things. When I was a kid, I was young one time. You are what I once was. I am what you will become. That's a scary thought, son. So, I made a model of the universe. You got little styrofoam balls. You painted them. You hung them on a string. It was a little mobile, I guess they say. And I was maybe 10 years old. Now, do you think that a 10-year-old child should understand the secrets of the universe? Should it be comprehensive? There should be. We have to recognize it. We are, suppose Christopher Columbus' aunt goes out on an exploration, sent out by the Queen, carrying the flag of, not España this time, but carrying the flag of the ant kingdom. And he starts crawling on me. Now he's crawling, I'm droning on, he's crawling. And he'll report back to the Queen, vast lands, hills, forests, all uninhabited. Now he's crawling on me, but he has no idea that I'm a person. I grow fragrant flowers for the deities. It's my therapy. They never say, I don't want to be a rose, or I don't want to, they just do their thing. And we offer them niceties to Radha Giridhari in San Diego. So I had been gone for some time. I came back, I was watering this one mower in a pot. And a colony of ants had moved into that pot. And you can imagine, all of a sudden the hose is there. They freak, women and children first, everybody will be. And I'm sure in the annals of the ant history, it will be recorded, the flood of 2012. But they have no idea that behind the flood is a hose, behind the hose is a faucet, behind a faucet is my hand. And there's a person. Why? Someone please explain to me the arrogance of the modern materialist to assume everything is subordinate to my perception. If I can't see it, if I can't smell it, if I can't chop it into little tiny pieces, it doesn't exist. Why? Please tell me why there can't be higher beings. I blow a dog whistle. In India, they have sufficient dogs. But if you blow a dog whistle, it's a frequency that you can't hear, but the dogs freak because they can hear it. So there's a sound spectrum I can't perceive. I hold a prism up to the light. You can see here with these crystals. There's so many colors that previously I couldn't see. My band of perception is very, very limited. What to speak of? Tendency to cheat, tendency to be illusion, all the other faults. And yet we claim a priori. If it's not subordinate to my perception, it doesn't exist. It is only in Kali Yuga where you found this profound arrogance and ignorance. But that's not what I want to talk about. We'll move on. I just want to make it. Again, when I was a child, we had a long driveway, down like that, where the car goes down. And I was very fond of my father. My father was a good man. Materially, he was a good man. So I would see the car go down the long driveway, and as it would turn left, my father would honk the horn. Beep, beep, and I would wave, And if I was home from my little sporting activities, my father would usually come home around 6 o'clock, I would be at the top of the driveway. I would see my father come, beep, beep, and I would wave to my father, and he would drive up the driveway. I'd be very happy. And I had my little world. I knew that I walked to my little school. I knew my little best friend. I knew I had my little route. My whole world didn't extend more than 8 to 10 blocks. That was my reality. One day it was take your child to work day, and my father took me to his office. And we went down the driveway, and we turned left. Okay, I knew my friend's house, I knew the school. All of a sudden we got on the freeway, the whole world opened up. We went to Los Angeles. We went into a skyscraper building and we went to the very top. Blew my mind. I had no idea that such a world existed. And we all have that experience. So the idea that everything is subordinate to our experience is patently bogus. Okay. This serves as a cautionary tale. The Bhagavatam is full of many success stories and, you know, do's and do nots. So a cautionary tale. Indra is always in anxiety. We may, Prabhupada was in Japan, Dynapon Press, has a long blissful story. Prabhupada set up Tamal Krishna Maharaj as the middleman. He argued with them, offered a super low price. The Japanese, they had to actually step out of the room, get some oxygen and come back. And then Prabhupada set himself up as the middleman. Said, oh, I don't know, he's, you know, obviously that's too low a price, which Prabhupada has told Tamal to offer. But your price is too high, let's settle somewhere in the middle. And Prabhupada got a super low price, but it was higher than the price that Prabhupada told Tamal to give. So in so many ways. So while they were out of their room adjusting their life airs, the Japanese executives, they asked Prabhupada, there was one minor, one junior executive was left in the room. So he didn't speak English very well, but Prabhupada asked him what his goal in life was. And all the businessmen, executives in the Dynapon printing, had put their cards on the table. So this man who didn't speak very much English, junior executive, he took all the cards, collected them, put them in a stack. And out of his pocket, he took his own card and he put it on top. That was his goal in life. So in the materialist, everyone's trying to get a little higher to get, but they can't even conceive of the opulence of Lord Indra who gets such a post. What to speak of Varuna or China? And yet they're always in anxiety. They're always wondering who's going to take my place, and it's temporary. So why should we want such a thing? It's simple intelligence. Everyone is chasing after happiness. Do they have this saying in India, like a dog chasing his own tail? You ever seen a cat? A little kitten will chase its tail. So we're chasing like that. The farmer, he's working out in the hot sun. And he takes his grains to the mill. And he goes in, the mill owner is sitting on a nice seat, he's got a fan over him, and he's just got his abacus, and he's saying, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell. And the farmer's thinking, oh, if only I could become a mill owner, I'd be so happy, so easy sitting there with the AC. Now, the king's tax man comes and takes a big chunk from the mill owner's income. The mill owner's like, I work so hard, I anxiety all, I can't sleep at night, buy, sell, buy, sell. And this king comes and takes a big bite out of everything I do. If only I could become the king. And the king is sitting in his royal palace. He's looking all of his servants. He's got someone fanning on this, someone fanning on this, like feeding him, peeled grapes or whatever it is. But he's there thinking about, you know, all the different, you know, running the kingdom and who's trying to usurp his throne and who's trying to take over here and all the citizens. He's completely in anxiety. And he's looking out his window and he sees the farm and he thinks, what a simple life, just farming in the field. Go ahead and become the farmer. So this is our factual situation. Bhagavatam gives a very nice example. A light of the Bhagavat. It describes how the crane, you know, the crane, the bird, is sitting in the stream and he's looking for something to eat. You know, he's trying to catch something. And it's got so many sticks and rocks are hitting its legs and it's cold. But he's hoping, oh, maybe I'll find a fish. Maybe. So we're like that. There are so many miseries in life. But we're thinking, well, Prabhupada was in Boston. And it was the winter time. One of the birds evidently had not gotten the memo and hadn't migrated. So the bird was there in the snow. Prabhupada saw the bird out his window. He said, this bird is so miserable, he would die. He would kill himself. But he finds a little grain, a little bug. Sun comes out for a few moments. He thinks, not so bad. There, a man falls in a well. This is Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj's story, so if it's copyrighted, I just hate his name. A man is walking in a field. He falls in a well. And as he's falling, you can imagine he's grabbing for some shelter. He's holding onto something, he hasn't fallen down. And his eyes, as they adjust to the light, he looks down, and there's a big king cobra saying, "Come to Papa, come on down, come to me." He can't go down. He looks up, and there's a tiger looking in the well saying, "Come on up, come on up." And then he looks at the two things he's holding on to, and they're roots coming out the side, and there's a white rat and a black rat, and they're gnawing through the roots. But he feels, and he looks up, and over the well, there's a branch. There's a beehive, and it's dropping a little bit of honey. So he opens his mouth. He thinks, "Hey, not so bad." The cobra at the bottom is our life heirs. They're fading. Time and tide wait for no one. The above is the tiger, the three modes of material nature. Adibhautik, adidaitik, adiatmik, ready to devour us at any point in time. And the black and white rats gnawing through the roots, daytime, nighttime. With every changing of the sun, the day, rising and setting of the sun, the day passes and it's lost. But we get a little drop of sense gratification, not so bad. So this is the Bhagavatam's honest analysis of our position. The theme, I guess I'll say one more thing and then I'll get to the theme of what I wanted to say. Do you know that, you know Prince Philip of England? Do you know that he has his shoelaces ironed? And then he has someone tie his shoes? Do you know that the Queen Elizabeth, of course she's been to our Krishna Balaram, so we could call her our temple, our school with the temple, so maybe we should call her Bhakti Liz, but we don't want to go over the edge there. But she always has done something right. Anyway, she has her newspaper, Times of England, of London, ironed every day so that the ink sets in it, and then someone puts on a white glove and makes sure that she doesn't get any ink on her hand when she reads the paper. So you can imagine the attempt to erase all the miseries in life. She's got hundreds of people trying to work, and I guarantee you, she's full of anxiety. She's got her dimwit son, Prince Charles, you know, he may go new age on her, so she's got to stay on the throne, ABC. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But the point is that wherever you are in this world, whatever arrangement you make, the material nature will outdo us. Therefore, we have the materialists, back to the materialist scientists. They spend their whole time fixing petty problems. We should appreciate the scope, the depth, the value of Vedic wisdom. It goes to the heart of the matter. What is the first thing that's essential for assuming you have a good doctor, if you're diseased, what is the first thing you need? Medi-Cal, good insurance, no. What is the first thing to get cured? You have to have a good diagnosis. You have to know what the cause of the disease is. Otherwise, what is the use? You might as well be taking colored water. You have to know what the cause of your disease is. Good diagnosis. Proper diagnosis. They spend their time. Prabhupada talks about, you know, the big accomplishment. AC. Okay, it's too hot. Now it's cold. Ah, very nice. When they were bombing, there's that interview. The Bangladesh war. Was 71, was that war? 70? Whatever it was. 71? And there's a blackout in Delhi. Prabhupada's talking to a newspaper reporter. And she says to us, "Oh, Swamiji, Swamiji, can you give us some words of wisdom in this time of distress?" Prabhupada said, "The bombing stops, you're not in distress." He said, "You're in distress at every moment. Padam, padam, yavivadam, at every step in this world here. It's too hot, okay, get an AC. It's too cold, get a heater." But all you've done is address the symptoms. You have not solved the problem. Birth, death, disease, and old age. Prabhupada's joke. Ah, not Prabhupada's joke. Sariputta's joke. A man comes home at night, and he sees his neighbor. And his neighbor is on all fours, searching around on the ground, up by the street, under a spotlight, under the street light. So picture, his house is here, street light is here, out by the street. And the man is on the ground, searching for something. So the neighbor, naturally concerned and curious, goes over to see what's up. And he smells, the man, you know, pickled to the gills, smells like a brewery, the man's drunk as a skunk. So he says, oh, jeez. So he says, what are you doing? So the man says, I'm looking for my house keys. I was trying to open my door, and I dropped my keys. So the neighbor says, but your door is up there. You're over here. Why are you over here? He says, oh, this is where the light is. Here's the purport. Sonic with the show. Because they assume that these questions cannot be answered, how to solve permanently birth, death, disease, and old age. These things can't be solved. So let's look over here at the little world that we can deal with. Let's, you know, make sure that you have an AC or a heater or some small, but all they're doing is dressing the wound. They're not curing anything. So the point I wanted to get to, Prabhupada was riding on a train in the evening. And there were some Indian gentlemen. Prabhupada's in his compartment. They were in the Chatterjee, Banerjee, Mukherjee, some nice Bengali Brahmins. And they were pious enough to understand, oh, let us, here's a sadhu, let us get blessings. And Prabhupada, you know, sometimes Prabhupada, although he was unlimitedly merciful, Prabhupada was in an airplane one time, and even he was sleeping, his feet were out in the aisle. He was stretched, and people were brushing against his feet. Prabhupada, Shruti Kirti was telling me that even in his sleep, Prabhupada was giving mercy, you know. But sometimes Prabhupada didn't want to be disturbed. He has important work to do. So he had, I was Tamal Krishnamurti, I forget who the others, they were like the linebackers, you know, blocking the door. And these Bengali Brahmins, they were trying to get around, you know, but a moment's inattention, they slipped in. They said, oh, Swamiji, Swamiji, give us your blessings. And they're thinking that Swamiji's like an ATM machine. They're just, something like that. But Prabhupada said, and what are those blessings? So they were caught by surprise. No one had ever asked him, what are these blessings? So the man said, I have this arthritis in my knee. And when it gets cold, Prabhupada made a face, no, wrong thing to ask for. So the man could understand it. His friend came back and said, oh, and may my family be happy. You know, he, like a concentric circle from his individual, let my family be happy. Again, Prabhupada. So then the third man said, and peace and happiness in the world, you know, may all men, you know, kija. Prabhupada again, wrong answer. And Prabhupada then pointed to Satsvarupa Maharaj. Thin, austere, sannyasi. Prabhupada said, this is my blessing. This saffron cloth. Will you take it? They were out the door. So part of it was Srila Prabhupada's sublime ploy to, you know, not offend them, but be left in peace and quiet. But also that blessing to renounce this world, become detached from this world. When we understand, there's a story. It's a Guru Nanak story, but why not? No, I mean, the ultimate goal is Krishna. So this man, his friend says, oh, there's a very nice sadhu in our village. He's giving katha tonight. Please come. His friend said, no. He was a rich man. His friend was very rich. He said, I know these sadhus. You know, he's going to go on and on and on. It's all going to be how I shouldn't be attached. And then after he gets me unattached, he comes and takes everything I've got. You know, so he's going to ask for money, at least some shoes, some umbrella, some land. I've been there, done that. But his friend prevailed. No, he's very nice. You please come. So the man came, and the katha was very nice. Sure enough, after the katha, he calls him to come over. The sadhu said, I'd like to speak to you. So the rich man came over. You know, Prabhupada says the face is the index of the mind. The sadhu could understand. So he said, you know, I want to ask you for something. There it is. There we go. So he said, I have this needle. I use this needle for sewing up my clothing, and I'm losing it all the time. He said, can you just take this needle, you keep it, and you give it to me in my next life? Anyone know what is the price of one needle? In India, you can probably buy a single needle. But in America, you can't even buy a single. You have to buy a pack. It's so inexpensive, you have to buy a pack. So it's an insignificant thing. The rich man could understand. I can't even keep track of this needle in my next life. I can't take a needle in my next life. So everything I have, what is the use? It will all dust to dust, ashes to ashes. So he could understand what the sadhu was saying. So our simple point is that, what is it? Tansa fiction of Bharataha. There is such a namuyate. That we understand I'm taking body after body after body. And I shouldn't be disturbed by this. And if I'm not disturbed, I learn to tolerate. Does anyone know, Prabhupada says, what the measure of a man's strength is? Is it equally? If you go to, what is it, Ripley's, believe it or not, is that what that is? If you go to Ripley's, believe it or not, you'll find so many, you know, a man pulls a train with his teeth. I mean, there's so many things. It's true. I don't know what his dentures were like, but anyway, this, such is the thing. So who knows, Prabhupada gives us, from the Bhagavatam, the measure of a person's strength. Yes, Prabhu?
His ability to tolerate provoking situations.
Very good. His ability to tolerate. Now we will test mine. We have a buzz, but now we have the full Indian flavor. We need a barking dog and a crying baby, we got it, right? And somebody's selling tea outside. I was at the LA Ratha Yatra. I serve in the free prasadam booth. You should see, it's fantastic. Thousands of people, just waves of people taking nice, full Savas Prabhu, our LA temple prep, full, nice, opulent Krishna prasadam. It's very blissful. We even have Christians, we're off the track, but so be it. What is the time? We even have Christians who come with signs, you know, turn or burn or this or that, you know, so many different things, right? They have a sign, you know, what is it? Anyway, I don't want to go, that's too much. You know. But the point is, I've seen that they go the whole festival with the signs. They get to the end, they're hungry, they put down the signs and they come take prasadam. So anyway, the universal, you know, basis, everyone likes prasadam. So what was I going to say? Oh, so I was in the free prasadam booth, and I like to slip out and hear the devotee. There's a question and the answer booth is right here, but I like to, it's just so blissful to hear the Vaishnavas, you know, preaching nicely. And we had one of the best, Vijayadvaita Swami, as far as succinct, powerful sutras, he's just the best, you know? So he was really, you know, like a stem speech. It was really winding up. Now the thing is, I guess I'll just say it. I was behind two very large ladies. They could have been men, but I mean, they were big. I mean, I'm not picking on ladies. They could have been large men. They just happened. These were land whales. I mean, they were big, okay? It matters at that point. I'm not trying to pick on. So I'm trying to see Jadavari jumping around these large moving objects. And he says, the essence of spiritual understanding, the beginning point of all true spiritual teachings, is that we are not this body. And one of these large ladies turns to her friend and says, boy, that's a relief. And she said it with such feeling. You could just feel she was carrying this thing around, you know. So to understand that we are not this body, it is actually an incredible relief. But it begins there. I'm sort of skipping ahead because I'm looking at time, but in Miami, they have some skyscrapers. Prabhupada said about these skyscrapers. I was on a walk with him in Chicago. You know, just... And if you look down, we were in Lakeshore Park, and you look down Lake Michigan, it's a beautiful scene. And, you know, it's designed to be a beautiful scene. It's a beautiful park, lake, and at the end is Chicago, the stacker of wheats. I forget Carl Sandburg's poem, but, you know, it's this, you can see this huge stack of skyscrapers. It's, you know, bustling with energy. Bravado. Prabhupada looked down the lake, he looked at it and said, they are simply stacking stones. And Maya will come with her boots and kick it all down. So they're simply stacking stones. And Maya comes and kicks it all down. So the Vaishnavs, there's American history. And I apologize, but I'm like my Protem and Otem, I'm born in America, I'm steeped in it. There's Manhattan Island. And Manhattan Island was originally obtained by the Dutch in the 1600s. And they traded the local Indians some shiny beads and some trinkets. I don't know how big. Anyone know? Do we have a factician here? I don't know how big Manhattan Island is, but it's, you know, and they liked it because it was in the river, and the harbor was there. It was a good location for their trade, for their commerce, for the fur trade. So they gave what they thought the dim-wit American Indians, we've given these trinkets worth nothing. And they've given this whole island to us. Ha ha ha, those dummies. The American Indians were thinking, this is a swamp. It's full of mosquitoes. There's no good hunting on it. We've got a whole continent to the west of us. We're getting these things that they've never seen before, very shiny, nice, beautiful things. Let these dimwit Dutch have this swamp. So my point is, same thing, same event, but according to one's value system, they saw completely differently. Each thought the other was foolish, and in their own spectrum of experience was completely correct. So we see this world, we understand they're simply stacking stones, and what is this body? You think the body is troublesome. What about the mind? I mean, I don't know about yours, but you know, mine gives me a good run for the money most of the time. There was a Prabhupada tells a story about the mind. Green coconut kachoris. Evidently, it's a particular Bengali prep. Very tasty, hard to make, rarely experienced. So the man's at a wedding, and green coconut kachoris, fantastic. But evidently, if you eat too many, they cause indigestion. But the man was thinking, how often do we see these? Woof. The mind says, listen, you know, when was the last time you saw a green coconut kachori? You know, it may be a long haul before you get another. He took a second. His mind said, you know, two, what's two? Might as well have another. Took three. As long as you're throwing caution to the wind, what three? Have four. He has four. So then he stops. Goes home, sleeping. In the middle of the night, he wakes up with a horrible stomach ache. Ah, indigestion. And his mind, which he tried to serve, so, my dear mind, whatever you want, his mind, on whose instruction he ate all the kachoris, that very same mind says, you idiot, you fool, why'd you eat so many? I was on traveling Sankirtan. Vaikuntha Pravino Pavamana, very nice devotee Pavamana. Vaikuntha is also very nice devotee, properly named. So, we used to get up, traveling in the van, used to get up, you know, Mangalarti. And he was just beat. He looked like he'd just been through the, you know, he's beat. I said, Pop, what happened? You're so tired. He said, I couldn't sleep all night. I said, why? He said, the window in the van was open. I was so cold, I couldn't sleep. I said, why did you get up and shut it? He said, I was too tired. So, you know, and this is our daily experience, moment-to-moment experience. So, to see these things, they were not the false ego. They had a mirror in the Miami. In Miami, they have many skyscrapers, condos by the ocean. The bay is on the other side. This one man You know, the faster the elevator goes, it costs you more money. So the man set it at a low setting, and people were getting, you know, they're knitting sweaters, or, you know, come on, man, let's go. So they complained. The homeowners association complained. You know, you can't speed up the elevators. So the guy seemed a little cheap. So he didn't speed up the elevators. But what he did was he put full-length mirrors in all the elevators. Nobody complained. They thought, man, they thought he'd fix the elevators. Because they spent their whole time, you know. They were completely happy, just looking in the elevators. Time flew by. So, in so many ways, we are foolish. I can certainly speak, you're all great St. Levitians. I can certainly speak of myself. We are, to become free from these things is a great relief. Prabhupada was speaking at a darshan. A Indian Christian came. I may have mixed this with another story. It may have happened in Toronto, Montreal. But the point is the same. The man became very agitated. Either he was an Indian Christian who Prabhupada, he said, your Christian is so lusty, he's immoral. Prabhupada counted to, no sir, you are immoral. What are Krishna's Purusha? Everything else is Prakriti. What are you doing with one of Krishna's gopis? The man was married. Just blew his mind. He'd never heard that one before. So he got completely angry. Or he was an impersonalist. This is when Prabhupada grabbed me by the shirt and said, if I say cotton ball or cotton shirt, you know, there's the byproduct, there's the source and byproduct. There's the, you know. Anyway, Prabhupada shook him. So either one, it became quite a shouting mess. And they were shouting at Prabhupada. And Brahmananda, I think you better leave. So the devotees afterwards were asking Srila Prabhupada, they were saying, what will happen to this man? He's come before a saint in Mahabhagwat, and he's committed offenses, you know, he'll be born in Calcutta, no arms and no legs, rolling in the gutter, playing a harmonica, or, you know, what will happen to this guy? And they all offered, well, he'll have to, you know, lifetimes as a worm and stool. They were all offering, and they went in a circle, and all the devotees offered different, both his future and his condition and how to remedy it. Went all the way around in a circle, came, you know, after they finished, Prabhupada looked up at his desk, and Prabhupada said, well, we could forgive him. Nobody had thought of that. Just try to understand for a moment Srila Prabhupada's heart. If we don't take offense, then the man doesn't suffer the reaction. You know, if one's given forgiveness of a Vaishnava. So, like the Dutch and the American Indians looking at the same thing and seeing it differently. The materialists, they see those that are weaker than them, let me exploit them. Any city you go to, there's always some people living down in the ghetto, and there's people living up on the hills with the nice views laughing. You always see it. You see it everywhere. Or they're by the ocean, wherever it's the night, or they're by the golf course, you want to find them, that's where they are. And they're exploiting. So they see someone weaker, let me exploit. They see someone the same, let me compete, let me push them down. They see someone who's higher than them, they become envious. That's their mindset. A Vaishnava, he sees someone weaker than him, someone in a misery, you know, suffering, he wants to give mercy. This is the essence of a Vaishnava. Let me give him some mercy. He can't tolerate it. Let me give him some mercy. We, in Los Angeles, we used to go out on Sankirtan, we used to, you know, chant Harinam and pass out books and devotees and things like that, all day long. And then we would break, and we would take a nice prasadam, nice, you know, bag of prasadam. You can only get our own individual bag. So, you know, you're in a park, you're taking prasadam. People were always come. And as devotees, we would wind up giving away all of our lunch prasadam. Because we thought, you know, we're going to go back to the temple, and these people will never see prasadam. But, you know, we were brahmacharis. You know, Prabhupada said an army runs on its stomach. So it was a little weird. You know, we weren't taking our lunch because we were distributing it. The Vaidyanath was our leader of our party. He actually asked Srila Prabhupada, what do we do, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, charity begins at home. You know, you should take your prasadam, which we were greatly relieved. And he had us make some extra bread balls. So we took these, we had prasadam to distribute, and we took our lunch. But the point is, the essence of a Vaishnava is compassion. So he gives mercy. He sees someone who's on the same level, he makes friendship. Someone who's superior, he offers service and takes instruction. It's such a, it's a same world, completely different world. A man dies, and he goes to heaven. Later on I'll tell a brahmachari joke about a man who dies and goes to heaven. say it differently. You can ask me differently. But in this case, and when he comes to consciousness, Christian view, it's an old Christian story. He sees the, you know, pearly gates and beautiful garden and heavenly music, second cell phone. Everything is sweet and blissful. He hears some music in coming from a particular building. He goes to that palatial building. He sees that all the people are there. There's a fantastic spread. Everything you could possibly imagine. Vegetarian. But the people are miserable because they're chained and they can't reach their mouth. He sees, oh, I'm in hell. Immediately, just like you, it's not just like that, it's similar to Yudhisthira Maharshi's vision of hell, vision of heaven. He goes to heaven. It's the same layout. Beautiful streets, beautiful, you know, celestial flowers, fragrance. He hears music, goes to a beautiful building. He goes in, fantastic spread. Everyone is also chained. But they're completely happy because they're feeding each other. Different mentality. They can reach that far. Same exact situation, different mentality, heaven and hell. So Vaishnava mentality, probably, we don't care. We go to heaven, we go to hell, as long as we've got Vaishnava Sangha, we're fine. We don't mind. The point I wanted to make is that we should tolerate. We should understand why chase after the things of this world, and we should tolerate. And in that tolerance, then will come Vaishnava vision. We will begin to develop compassion for the conditioned souls. We should appreciate the gift, and I'm sure you all do, we should appreciate the fantastic gift of Krishna consciousness. I was driving out to Las Vegas. It was not part of a GBC fundraising plan. I was driving there to, we have a sweet little temple there. So I was driving, and I'm the GBC. I was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, Ann Arbor, Michigan. We had a temple that had 8 devotees. I asked Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean to be in charge of one of your temples? I thought he would say, you're one of my generals on the front line. You know, you're empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He stopped, he just came down, sized me up, and he said, if anything goes wrong, it's your fault. So I try to remember that. Prabhupada went on and said, he said, Prabhupada managing it's such a headache and, you know, this and that, sometimes the devotees. And he said, actually, if you remember that you're blessed by being a manager, managing a temple or whatever, you're blessed because you get to regularly serve the Vaishnavas. And if I think, again, same situation, different vision, if I think, hey, yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and this toilet just broke and nobody's there to clean it up. Well, a nice chance to serve the Vaishnavas. But the point I wanted to make was that I was driving out to Las Vegas and I stopped. And have you ever been way out in the middle of nowhere where there's no light and seen the mountain sky or the desert sky? It's really a beautiful and mystical experience. I highly recommend it. And it's both, you feel very insignificant, and it feels very intimate. You feel very close to all the creation, and you feel that, you know, I am just a spot in the middle of nowhere. So it's a very moving experience. And it reminded me of the first step in God realization. And from that recognition of how I'm not the controller, and yet there is a controller. And beyond that comes a sense, first comes the awe and reverence. Then comes a sense of gratitude. They say Mother Earth. You know, everything we need is being provided. There's a sense of gratitude. So after awe and reverence comes gratitude. A sense of dependence. From dependence comes gratitude. And the natural response from the emotion of gratitude is let me serve. One comes to that point of service. So the... In the same fashion, the freedom from the bodily concept, from the false ego, from the ravages of the mind, from the fear of death. Both my mother and father left this world in a fantastic way. We had a devotee. Prabhupada's disciple had been gone away for some time. he had AIDS actually, came back, realized, I have no shelter but the Vaishnavas, became quite serious. At the end of his life, he'd been in a coma. All of a sudden, he's lying flat, he put his hands up, he said, Prabhupada, you came. And he left this world. What a gift we've been given. Even my mother, last words, opened her eyes, hadn't spoken. She said to me, she said, do you think I'll be born in a devotee family? I said, because she liked the devotees. I said, definitely. I said, 100% guaranteed, Mom. She lay back on her pillow and said, very good. That would be very good. Last thing she said, left her body about an hour later. So, even afraid of death, we're free. My father worked all of his life. At his retirement dinner, everybody's there in tuxedos. I'm there by Krishna's grace in a dhoti like that. Everyone's congratulating him. So when he gave his speech, he said, I began work at 8 years old. I had a paper route, you know, delivering newspapers. He said, and I've worked my way all my life. He said, now I've sold my company and I'm retiring, and everyone's congratulating him. He said, but my younger son is more intelligent than me. So they're trying to sort that one out. He said, he retired at 17 and a half. They were still stunned. And then he said, he joined the Hare Krishna movement. So they were appreciating, you know. So the Prabhupada said, they asked Prabhupada, what do you do for recreation? Srila Prabhupada was genuinely puzzled. He said, our whole movement is recreation. It's cyclical, chanting, dancing, feasting, chanting, dancing, feasting. I mean, we work hard for Krishna, but Raghunath Maharaj mentioned that survey, how people feel about things and what make people happy. I saw that same survey, maybe somebody sent it to me. And one of the keys, after they get the basics, after they've got enough, you know, food and shelter for themselves and their children, once they've got that down and some basic health care, what makes people happy? Is feeling that their life has purpose, that they're part of something bigger than themselves. This is the greatest, this is what people are hungry for. I wanted to give one story and then we'll finish. And I'll bring it back over. I was in Los Angeles, young Bhakta, by Karanda Prabhu's grace. We were sitting in Prabhupada's room, temple presence, and in front, we were, you know, way in the back. And it was as cold as it gets in the West Coast. It was about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, so we were all bundled up, suffering the cold. And if you go to Prabhupada's quarters, you can see the desk, you can see the big window. The clouds parted for just a moment. Sun shined through that window, and a ray of golden light came down. Prabhupada was sitting at his desk, and he alone was bathed in this shaft of golden light. We were all in darkness, figuratively and literally. And Prabhupada was sitting in this ray of light. And Srila Prabhupada, who did not miss a thing, Prabhupada looked up, could understand the mood, and said, yes. He said, one day you will feel this sun just like your lover's embrace. I mean, Krishna says, I'm the pure light of the sun and the moon. So that's how, Prabhupada said, you think you're sitting on the, another time in a public lecture, I was there. Prabhupada said, you think you're sitting on the floor, but I am sitting on the hand of Krishna. So that confidence, that shelter, that feeling, the loving embrace of Krishna, that fearlessness, that great gift has been given to us. The Madhu Vis Prabhu, and this I'm going to end here, I promise. Madhu Vis Prabhu, you know, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who has performed lifetimes of pious activities and reactions to sinful deeds, you know, he can take the spiritual life. So Madhu Vis Prabhu said, but Prabhupada, you know, what you speak of stockpile of pious deeds, I didn't have any stockpile of pious deeds. I am performing sinful deeds until the day I met you. Guru Kripa got up in the morning, saw a picture of the devotees in the newspaper, and went to go to beat up the devotees. That was his joy. That was his mission. He showed up, Jayananda said, hey, can you hold on a minute on that, and can you help me with this fridge? And Jayananda was so potent, Then before I knew it, Guru was loading this and that into a van, and, you know, working with the devotees. They filled him full of Krishna prasadam. By the end of the day, he was saying, hey, I'm going to join these people. So the Vaisheshika Prabhu said the other day, again, that survey, feeling part of something valuable, something bigger than ourselves, and the joy that we receive, the relief of Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in one song, quoted by Vaisheshika Prabhu, that the materialists, the karmis, the whatever you want to call it, the suffering conditioned souls, they're actually sitting in their house, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. They're looking down the window, they're looking out the window, they're looking down the road. And they're wondering, when will Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party come and deliver me? That's what they're actually doing. Everything else they're drinking, all their sins, they're just filling the time. What else are they going to do? They don't know anything else. And they're looking out the window, when will the Sankirtan party come and deliver me? We had, I can't resist. There was a devotee, died in the town. He's still in Los Angeles. Very shy, very young devotee. When he moved into our temple in Ann Arbor, I was telling people, you gotta go on book distribution. You gotta go. It's so nice. It's so blissful. It's so enlightening. You know, all of the things. He was super shy. He agreed to go out with me. We Kirtan party would go down the middle of the street. The devotees would go door to door. I swear to you, first door we knocked on, he's there. I'm standing behind him. You hear all the locks, you know. The door opens. It's a little old lady. And I had told him, put her book in her hand. Put the, because they have a sense of ownership, they get attached to it, you know, then you can put the book. So he gave her a copy of the Shirsha Upanishad. You know, Mahavishnu? She didn't say a word. She looked at the book. She looked at him. Nice Vaishnav Tilak. She looked at the book. She looked at him. And she fell over dead. Boom. It was a little unnerving. You know, we had to get the neighbors, we got the ambulance, we had to call 911, the relative. She was gone, you know. And the blissful part was the devotee said, I told him, I said, Prabhu, I said, you know, she left her body looking at a picture of Krishna. I could look at, looking at a Vaishnava. I said, she was simply dragging on in that apartment, simply waiting for you to knock on the door. That's the only reason she was alive. He asked me, he said, does that happen every day? I said, no. But we should know for a fact that they are out there waiting for us. Prabhupada said there are Brahmins on every corner. You just have to go and pick them up. If we don't go out, who will pick them up? If we're not pure and strong in Krishna consciousness, who will have the ability to deliver them? So I'm speaking to myself, of course. But we should tolerate the miseries of this world. We should understand it's all temporary, who cares for it. We should understand the great good fortune, how we can see through the eyes of the Vaishnavas, and know that they're waiting for us to knock on their door. All glories to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party. Thank you. Now we get to take prasadam. It is such a tough move.
Hare Krishna.